Balance is a program which could improve your health. My name is Carl Loskin, and I'm sitting in for Croft Woodruff, who is away for another week. And so we have the privilege of presenting a great program today. Yes, so we're shortly, within the next 5 minutes, we will be speaking with Dr. Gabriel Cousens, C-O-U-S-E-N-S, and he is a very tremendous, varied person who has been initiated into the rabbinical rabbi. He serves as a spiritual teacher, and he was involved with the Essenes, and he runs an organization called the Tree of Life. And he was also a captain of an undefeated football team, and so many other things. And at the moment, the Tree of Life, he's involved with humanitarian work and is creating world peace on all levels. He has been leading peace meditations around the world. And so we'll be hearing from Dr. Gabriel Cousens within a few minutes. But he also wrote, to my mind, a very definitive article about perspectives on dairy. We'll be covering those and many other aspects of that. But before we do that, I'd like to just cover some of the aspects of the dairy production in British Columbia and Canada. You know, recently, I think about a year ago, there was a series of articles in the Vancouver Sun, and it was paid for by the provincial government, and it says, Believe BC, full-page adverts in the Vancouver Sun. And one of them featured the agricultural industry. And it said, British Columbians are told to be proud of our cows, because they have the highest producing milk cows in Canada. Each cow produces 8,839 liters of milk a year. That amounts to 24.2 liters of milk a day for each cow, an average. That means some cows are producing much more than that. Well, normally a cow, when it is feeding its calf, the calf consumes on average some 2 to 3 liters of milk a day. So what's really happening on the scene here, if we're able to make cows produce an average of 24.2 liters of milk a day? Well, this staggering quantity of milk has what we might call made the cows in British Columbia literally a veritable milking machines. Furthermore, as you've heard on much of Animal Voices, the life expectancy of a cow should be some 20 to 25 years for the average cow in Canada. And the average cow is slaughtered after 45 months. During this relative short lifespan, the dairy cow will have 2 calves. After the second calf has been born, the cow's milk production declines. And since the industry has a need to maximize profits, the cow is then slaughtered. That's where most of our hamburger meat comes from. They're sent to the hamburger factory. The idea of producing so many calves means also that the calves are painfully separated from their mothers soon after birth so that humans can drink the milk. The byproduct of milk production is these baby calves, which gives rise to the existence of veal crates. We'll ask Dr. Cousens about that. The dissemination of huge quantities of animal excrement presents a challenge to farmers. The byproduct of farming eventually leads to the fecal contamination of our groundwater, wells, rivers, and the oceans. The latest statistics we have on British Columbia is that 70% of all cows in Canada never leave the concrete. The only time they leave their stalls is when they go to the milking stalls. The idea that cows live happy lives on green pastures, to my mind, is a myth. We'll hear more from that from Dr. Cousins. I believe we have him on the line. Dr. Cousins?
I'm here.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to hear from you. And we've given you an introduction because you're involved with holistic medicine. You're an MD. You were involved with sports. You were a captain of the team. And you also believe that peace is the way, that if we live peaceful lives, peace will eventually come to this world. Now, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about your institution, your place in Arizona, and it's called Tree of Life.
Yeah, Tree of Life Rejuvenation Center is an oasis for awakening. And we work on the physical plane, emotional, mental, and spiritual, with a large emphasis on the spiritual aspect. We're a completely vegan community and emphasize live foods. We have apprentice programs in live food production and also a complete vegan farming apprentice program. We also have a master's program in a two-year master's program in vegan live food nutrition, as well as many other courses like Zero Point, which is a psycho-spiritual course for helping you go beyond the mind. We have conscious eating courses. We have sacred relationship courses. And we do a tremendous amount of fasting. And particularly, we have a program called the non-toxic baby program, because the average newborn, whether it's Canada or U.S., has about 200 toxins in the umbilical cord, because we have created a very, very toxic environment. And getting worse as we talk, because of the depleted uranium that the U.S. has dumped in its war in Iraq, it doesn't stay in Iraq. We're getting the secondary smoke of that all over the planet. So we have a detox program connected with the use of zeolite and fasting, green juice fasting, that is in a week or two clearing a lot of these toxins out of the system. We also have a program for healing diabetes naturally. We just had six people come here who were, they did a film on them. They were more like the McDonald's people. And they were all on insulin. And within 4 days, we had them all off their insulin. And by the end of a month, all their blood studies had returned to normal. And several of them had completely reversed their diabetes, and others were well on the way. So we have a one-month healing diabetes natural program as well, and people can also come here for general holistic healing, or just if they want a spiritual retreat, or if they want to be in a vegan.
Now, there's also, would you believe that there's a spiritual component to all the food we eat? Like, these are living entities. When we consume them, do we do that reverently?
Yeah. Food is a love note from God, a gift of love from God. And when we eat it with consciousness, we create a situation where we're able to take in the full experience of the energetics of the food, because we're literally biting into the living planet, which is the expression and creation of the divine.
So then how do you feel that the involvement of the animals and human consumption, what is that doing to us?
Well, from a vegan perspective and also from a spiritual perspective in general, when we're eating animals, the problem is we kill them, and that involves a lot of cruelty, misery, and pain. And particularly with factory farming, we're taking that cruelty, misery, and pain, and it's coming into our systems. And therefore, it's bringing that into us. And as a result, we suffer that cruelty, misery, and pain, and it comes out in terms of disease. For example, people don't think, well, what's the big deal with dairy? But how many people are aware of the fact that if you have one glass of milk a day, you are increasing your amount of ovarian cancer by three times. That's an amazing kind of little statement. In lung cancer, if you have three or more glasses of milk, there's a twofold increase in lung cancer. Prostate cancer, if you have three glasses of milk, 0.5% increase in cancer, like 250% increase in cancer. So that's just a little bit of what's going on. I mean, what we know, unfortunately, is that there's a bovine leukemic virus, in particularly showing up in raw milk. It's in two-thirds of the raw milk in the United States. It tends to get killed when it's pasteurized, but that is transferred on to people. Lymphomas, they did a study in Norway and also in Great Britain. Norway study had 422 people, and the Great Britain study had 16,000 people. The study was for 11.5 years, and they basically found that if people had milk, two glasses or more of milk a day, they increased their rate of lymphoma by 350%. So obviously we're taking, we're creating some problems for ourselves. Mad cow disease is another thing that does happen, and that's of course a more important issue. I don't know if it's really in Canada, but the Friends of the Earth cite several autopsy studies in the United States that showed they had between 3% and 13% of the people that were diagnosed with Alzheimer's actually had mad cow disease. And so, according to the Friends of the Earth, there may be 120,000 cases of Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease in the U.S. So this is just some of it. But you're taking in the pain and misery into your life when you're eating pain and misery.
Now, Dr. Cousins, I'd like to just zero in on some of these aspects that you've just mentioned here. And one of them was the pasteurization of the milk, which does not kill all the bacteria. And is that, you mentioned in one of your articles about the Crohn's disease and colitis. Were there any studies about that?
Yes. You're referring to the Mycobacterium parabetuberculi. And it appears, and in the cows it's called John's disease, which is an interesting term. And in the cows they get chronic diarrhea and colitis. It's more in unpasteurized milk, but also studies in the United States, the UK, and Czech Republic have found the viable paratuberculi organisms in pasteurized milk as well. And what it seems to be linked to, and although it isn't totally fun, it seems to be linked to Crohn's disease. So it's a similar disease as what the cows get, which is the diarrhea and colitis. That's actually what's happening in humans, and that's the Mycobacterium paratuberculi is the organism, and pasteurization doesn't seem to help, doesn't seem to prevent it.
Right. Now, I recall about 2-3 years ago that those studies made headlines in the British press, and that I looked out, because I get most of the leading Canadian newspapers, national newspapers. There was no mention of it at all over here. But anyway, it made headlines in the UK, where the studies were made, that said that Crohn's disease and colitis, the bacteria was not destroyed by pasteurization, and I believe they increased the temperatures of the pasteurization subsequent to those studies, but it certainly does implicate raw milk.
Well, for sure, raw milk's a big problem. You know, a lot of people who are in the more organic life kind of think, well, if it's raw, it's okay, but it's not. Raw milk has a lot of problems. One of them is, for example, is that the bovine leukemic virus recovered from two-thirds of the samples of raw milk. Now, that's pretty serious. We also have some other problems which happen with actually bubonic plague. 1984, the Journal of American Medicine reported in multi-states in the United States a series of infections with bubonic plague from the milk. And raw milk, again, is more serious. At UCLA, they found over a third of the cases of salmonella were related to raw milk. So you get an idea of how absolutely serious this problem is. And I think that's, I think, really reasons.
Dr. Cousins, before I go on to asking you some about the conceptions that people have about dairy, that we need it for calcium and for healthy bones, for nutrition and things like that, we'll just one of the things that I'd like you to explain a bit about white blood cells and pus cells. I wonder if you could explain that to us.
One of the things that goes on is that particularly with the genetically engineered milk that the people get, there's like about 60%, 70% incidence of mastitis. And that brings a lot of pus cells into the milk. In fact, in Florida, the average per liter is 633 million pus cells. That's a lot of pus cells. But the other thing we got is the milk concentrates the pesticides, the herbicides, the antibiotics, the hormones, radioactive iodine, radioactive uranium, which is what we've been using for weapons. So there's some real problems here that are, to me, are a real concern. And what happens is it's not being filtered by it comes out in the milk of the cow because they have infections.
So why is milk, would you say it's mucus forming, or why does it do that?
Well, I mean, it does it because they have an infection, so that's being passed on to us. That's the mucus cells. That the white blood cells come from infection. But is it mucus forming?
Right.
According to nutmilk.com, we create about a gallon of mucus when we start drinking milk that accumulates in our body. But there's many problems with milk. For example, I don't think most people know that milk has opioids in them.
Maybe you can explain that.
They're called caseomorphines. And that's how people get addicted. And they're, according to Dr. Neil Barnard, a medical doctor, in his book Breaking the Food Seduction, these are about a tenth as powerful as pure morphine. So in other words, you're talking about pretty strong stuff that makes people addicted. But this is a little bit of part of the problem that we're facing. I think that there's another whole level. You know, when we talk about health, we need to see that we're connected as a global village. And there's a tremendous amount of ecological damage that comes from the cows. And what are we talking about? Well, let's give a few statistics and then make sense of it. There's about 40 million people who starve to death each year. It's about 29,500 kids, according to the United Nations, who die each day of starvation. So how does that come about, and how's that related to cows? Well, when you realize that the grain that would normally go to feed the human population is being fed to cows, and the grain that can feed 100 cows can feed 2,000 people, you begin to start to get an idea of what we're talking about. So the hoarding of resources comes from the fact that there would, if everybody were vegan, stop eating meat, there'd be enough food to feed the world seven times over. It would be not a problem of starvation on the planet. That's really important to understand. And in the U.S., the cows consume about five times the amount of grain as humans, and in the world, the cows consume two times the calories of the human population. So that's a hoarding resources there. They also use considerably more water. They use about half the water in the United States. A vegan saves 1.5 million gallons of water a year, which is tremendous. So destruction of the land plays a role too. 85% of the land is destroyed, topsoil is destroyed through the cattle industry. For a vegan, 5%. So we have some really important pieces. In terms of energy, it takes about 20 times more energy to produce a calorie of meat versus a calorie of vegetable protein.
Then on top of that, the cows go into feedlots, and they're being sprayed with pesticides and fungicides. And what is the end result for the human?
They did some research, and I'm going to just recite a little bit about how many pesticides and herbicides were found by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. You know they're not looking too hard either. They found benzene, which is a carcinogen, chloroform, DDE, dildrin, indolsulfane sulfate, heptachlor epoxide, methoxychlor, permetin transstyrene, tetrahydrochloroethylene, toluene. That's a little bit, but let's tell the whole story. After Chernobyl, I think Chernobyl was in 86 or something like that, the rate of perinatal mortality in Boston, 900%. In Seattle, Washington, which is not too far from where you are, it increased 245%. Now, what happened? What happened is the radioactive iodine that had been released from Chernobyl came over on the clouds, on the airstreams, landed on the grass. But what do cows do? They eat the grass, and they concentrate it. What happened is all these kids started dying of radioactive iodine poisoning that they had gotten from the milk and from the mother's milk that their mothers had, the mothers had drinking milk, and they were creating mothers in their own milk that they're getting from the mothers.
Now, I'd just like to mention that we're speaking with Dr. Gabriel Cousens, C-O-U-S-E-N-S, and his webpage is www.treeoflife.un, and they're based in Arizona. So look them up on your webpage. Are you listening to Co-op Radio, and you're listening to Dynamic Health on 102.7 FM in Vancouver? Dr. Cousens, I'd like to ask you about the hormones. I mean, we're concentrating on dairy products in today's program, but there's some people say up to 58 different hormones in cow's milk, and it contributes towards making a baby calf grow into a 400-pound cow in 6 months. What are these hormones? I mean, there's maybe estrogen in there. Men are consuming that. Maybe you can just enlighten us a bit about that.
Well, the important thing to understand a little bit, because we talked about the 400-pound calf, is that mother's milk has about 10 times higher amount of specific fatty acids for brain development, your long chain omega-3 fatty acids, whereas the cow's milk has got about 5 times higher protein. And it's not really designed for humans. Now, the hormones that we're most concerned about is probably estrogen, because that's the biggest hormone that the cows take, and that's really to add weight. Now, in men and women, it's a problem. There was a study done in Puerto Rico around 1990s. And what they found is that the little girls and even little boys were developing breasts. The little girls were having onset of menses ages 3 and 4, and people became very concerned. And when they researched it up, they saw that it was from the milk and meat with the high estrogen content, which was completely throwing off the hormonal function of these children. When they stopped giving them the milk and the meat, what happened was all these symptoms went away. But what we can look at very clearly is the before we started putting hormones into the cows and so forth, the average age of menses was more like 14 for a woman. Now it's more like 10 years old.
Now you're talking about the sexual aspect of this, and refers me to...
That's very destructive, because what does a 10-year-old know about sex? Yep, they're developing breasts and menstruating, and it's like it's totally spilling off the whole human cycle. We're not really meant to drink milk. The natural cycle is for, you know, ages 2, 3, 4, you know, you're getting mother's milk, and then your enzymes change. The result is there's only over 50 million people in the United States who are lactose intolerant and have all kinds of symptoms. 90% of black people are lactose intolerant, 20 to 40% of white people, and then other races are in between. So it's really unhealthy to be doing this. Besides, it's unhealthy for the cow. In terms of cruelty, most cows' average lifespan is 18 to 35 years. A milking cow lives about 3 years. The life force is literally milked out of them because they impregnate them while they're still milking, and so they're using a double burden, and they're literally, their life force is being milked away. So we're creating an additional level of the problem. But the hormone that's most detrimental is the estrogen. Now, for men, of course, it's not good because it starts feminizing the men. For women, it's really not good because it increases the incidence of uterine and breast cancer, as well as throws off their whole hormonal cycles.
The smoking gun, I believe, is with the cancer drugs, which reduce the amount of estrogen in the body, and especially the two drugs for breast cancer, which are widely sold, which is prescribed, is Arimidex and tamoxifen, and both of them work on the estrogen levels. And you're saying there's in the body, and you're saying there's estrogens in these products that increase. Do they in fact increase the level of estrogens in the body if you consume milk?
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're talking about, is that the cows are filled with estrogen, and those little kids in Puerto Rico, you know, that was a big example, because you're talking about 3 and 4 year olds having sexual symptoms from too much estrogen. Certainly in women, you know, as they get older, you know, even worse, because you're bringing it into a cancer situation.
Right. Now, well, you've given us all this news about dairy products, which most people probably have not heard of. But let's relate it to somebody who's listening to this program today and says, well, I'd like to quote you, Dr. Cousins, and when you say milk is not designed for humans. And I think that says it all for me. We're consuming it as adults. We're consuming it from another species. So would you be prepared to take some phone calls from the public?
Sure.
You have time?
Sure.
Okay. Well, if anybody would like to call ask Dr. Cousins a question, the phone number to call is 604-684-7561. Dr. Cousins will try to help you, because there's many aspects that people firmly believe that and we have a caller, so over to you, caller, to Dr. Cousins. Caller, you're on line 2. So, and I'll press it again. There we go.
Is that me?
You could fire away.
Oh, okay. In addition to everything that Dr. Cousins has mentioned in terms of the detrimental effect of milk on human health, I'd like to add to the fact that for the last 30 or more years, Dr. Osler has been trying to draw attention to the fact that when you homogenize that milk, it becomes a major heart disease originator. And in Acres USA, which is an ecological, an agricultural paper, I remember reading an experiment where they took the milk from the cows, homogenized it, then fed it to calves, sacrificed the calves after 9 weeks, and they all had artery damage. So not only do we drink a substance that is not good for us, we then process it in a way that makes it literally health-destroying.
Well, it seems like we have some very informed listeners. Over to you, Dr. Cousins.
Toxin for the system.
Sorry, we missed your first sentence there. Could you repeat, please?
When you homogenize the milk, you create a release of the xanthine oxidase, which seems to be related to heart disease.
Right. Okay. Well, let's. What are the? Do you have any other questions, caller?
Not really. I know that the. Of course, the other point that many people don't realize when you said they're producing 25 liters of milk per milking, the cow can only absorb a certain amount of nutrition. Now, if you're going to have to spread the minerals and the essential nutrients that the cow gets from its food. Over that amount of milk, you have to come to the conclusion that there really isn't very much nutrition in 1 liter of milk.
That's correct.
I would like to add it, in addition, there is a certain amount of high protein in the milk which has been associated with osteoporosis. They've actually found that if you have 3 glasses or more of milk a day, there's an increased rate of osteoporosis. So there's not much nutrition, but there is a certain amount of protein which even causes more problems. But that's a good point that she's making about the poor nutrition, because the cows are so depleted.
Thank you, caller. And if there's anybody else who'd like to call, the phone number is 604-684-7561. We're speaking with Dr. Gabriel Cousins from the Tree of Life Institute in Arizona. The webpage is www.treeoflife.nu. What does the NU stand for, Dr. Cousins?
New University.
There we go. It's a new idea. And so let's go over some of the different aspects. We have another caller here. And just hold on. Anyway, I have a friend who decided to discontinue being a vegan because she's pregnant. What would you say to her?
I would say it's a mistake.
It's a mistake. And but of course, the industry, how do you think the industry convinced them that she should change her ways? I mean, there's probably many different ways, but, you know, they feel that that the alternative is not adequate. Maybe you can address that.
We have actually done research on live food babies, which come from the mothers, right? And we are finding that live food babies are healthier, have an average weight, because most kids are overweight now, but they have average weight and they're a little bit higher than average in terms of height. But I think the main thing that's very important is that you can be a completely healthy vegan, but you do need to have a B12 supplement, and that's something that people did used to get from dairy. You can't get it from dairy because it's in the bacteria in the milk. But you can get plenty of protein. For example, spirulina is 70% protein, much higher in protein than milk, of course, and it is secondary to mother's milk is the second highest in GLA, which is very important for milk production. So there's many healthy vegan mothers, if they get sufficient protein with using what we call protein concentrates like spirulina or chlorella, for example, and do take a B12 supplement, then it's completely safe.
Now, before we go over to the next caller, maybe you can just mention some of the books that you've written.
The latest book is Spiritual Nutrition, The 6 Foundations of Spiritual Life. A lot of our work is about spiritual life. The second to last book I wrote is The Rainbow Green Life Food Cuisine. It got up to number 8 on Amazon.com. And then before that is what people call the Bible of nutrition, the vegetarian nutrition, is Conscious Eating. And then we also have a book called Depression Free for Life, showing how to be free of depression without using antidepressants. Also wrote a book called The Sevenfold Peace.
They can go to treeoflife.nu.
And if they want to call, 520-394-2520. Or actually, I don't know about out of the country, but it's 866-394-2520.
Over to you, line two, and over to Dr. Cousins.
Yes, from your experience, doctor, what do you think the central problem is in disseminating this information to the public? Let's say North America, United States, and Canada. What are the problems of like having the public really understand this? Like, what are the problems within the media for disseminating this information?
Lobby and the dairy and beef lobby, because they're linked, has a very strong effect on the media. So they don't really want to get the information out to the people, because then people would not buy their product. So what's happening now is, like, stations like what we're talking on right now are now, who are independent of the lobby, the media lobbies, are now caring and doing that service for the public. So what we need to do is put more energy into listening to radio shows like this one, where more of the information, true information, is being shared with people. It's about money. I mean, obviously, if you're in the dairy industry, would you want people hearing about this? Of course not. And when you have money, you can put pressure on the media not to release this information.
Thank you, caller. And Dr. Cousins, I'd like to ask you about the concept of calcium. That's the big sell from the dairy industry. Maybe you can just elaborate on that.
By the time that you have homogenized and pasteurized, the calcium that's really available is quite unavailable, because the enzymes needed for that calcium are destroyed by the heat. That's one thing. The second thing is that the research, for example, about osteoporosis and so forth, seems to very strongly suggest that actually milk, too much milk, makes it worse. And really, the way to prevent osteoporosis is much more weight-bearing exercise and eating, you know, your leafy greens. We find that vegans have about one-fourth the amount of osteoporosis as meat eaters and milk drinkers.
Now, many people say, well, I'm buying organic milk now, or I'm buying yogurt now, and that's much healthier. Put this truth to them on that one, if you can.
Sure. First, let's get back to the milk issue of calcium. The phosphorus in the milk is also a problem, because phosphorus draws calcium out of the bones. The high protein draws calcium out of the bones. Now, the argument with the raw milk is, again, you're still contributing to misery on the planet. On the ecological thing, you're still contributing to a hoarding of resources and disrupting the ecology and pain and suffering. Now, that's if you go beyond, let's say, our narcissistic needs to, oh, I need what I need, and nobody else matters. But let's say we see the whole planet is important, and that's an issue there. I think the other problems with raw milk is, again, it's even got more strong caseomorphines. And I don't know if people know Elmer's glue. Do you have Elmer's glue where you are?
Sure, people have heard about it.
Well, the main component in Elmer's glue is casein. So when you're drinking milk, it clogs the system. It puts, in essentially, glue in the system. And that's not really great. And then that, it tends to create, and probably raw milk more than others, an inflammation in the lymphatic system. This is why there's an increase of 350% amount of lymphomas, swelling the liver and spleen and so forth, in people who drink milk, because it inflames the system. And there's one other thing that people need to understand that we didn't cover. It's called diabetes. And we're a little acutely aware of it, because we do a lot of work with diabetes. So that is the rate of people who have juvenile diabetes is 11 times higher in milk drinkers. And why is that? Because milk has about 100 antigens, which create antibodies in the body, response to those 100 antigens, that cross-react and destroy the beta cells of the pancreas, which make insulin. So in the countries where you have the highest milk drinkers, like Norway, Sweden, you have a much higher rate of juvenile diabetes. So this is actually a quite important issue here that we didn't quite bring up before, but it's extremely important when you see the whole picture. In milk drinkers with kids with juvenile diabetes, they have 8 times the number of antibodies. And in Finland, which is the world's highest milk consumption, they have the world's highest rate of insulin-dependent diabetes, meaning implying that the antibodies created by the milk, drinking the milk, is creating the highest rate of destruction of the beta cells of the pancreas. So that's a pretty important thing.
Right. Before we go over to organic and raw, to distinguish between the two, we have another caller here. So over to you on line two.
Hello?
Yeah. Ask Dr. Cousins a question.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank you for the program. It's very informative. I have no doubt in my mind that dairy products are poor for human health. I'm wondering if you could comment about soy. I've recently read a book called The Whole Soy Story by Kayla T. Daniel that is warning about the dangers of soy products. Soy contains phytoestrogens, which can mimic some of those symptoms you were describing that dairy products can cause, precocious puberty, etc. And many people who wish to alter their lifestyle and eating patterns are often advised by advocates of vegetarianism to turn to soy products because it's often fortified with vitamin B12 and other vitamins. Soy is a highly processed food. I know that you're not personally mentioning this during the program, but I'm just wondering if you could perhaps give your thoughts on soy.
Over to you, Dr. Cousins.
That's a very informed person. Great question. The answer is I completely agree with what she's talking about. There was a study done in Japan with heavy soy users versus light soy users, a 5-year study. And what they found is after 5 years, the people who took the soy actually had significant brain deterioration. The vacuoles of the brain, or the ventricles of the brain, were enlarged, which means there was a deterioration of the brain. That's not the greatest. We don't eat soy, because it's highly processed. The other problem we have with soy is it's a great amount of it is genetically engineered at this point. A third problem is that soy does have the phytoestrogens, and it creates a lot of hormonal imbalances. So we have, in fact, one person did a study, and they found in one bottle of soy milk is equivalent to 2 to 3 birth control pills, amount of estrogen. So we really don't recommend soy as a transition food. I also know in the 70s, you know, that was what people first thought, oh, this is a good transition food. But now we're seeing, not so good. Now, soy has now become in the top 6 allergenic foods because of also the genetic engineering. So there's no reason to include soy in your diet at all.
Thank you, Dr. Cousins. And you know, the best source of calcium could be leafy greens. Is that right?
This is our opinion. Yes, the answer is yes. Now, we want to go back to the I think they're called the Bantu Africans, and those folks have no milk, and they have no osteoporosis, and they have an average of 350 milligrams of calcium in their diet, which is very little. So again, we don't want to overemphasize calcium, but yes, leafy greens are very, very high in calcium. And we certainly feel it's not a substitute for milk, it's far better than milk.
Now, I'd like to make a station identification. You're listening to Dynamic Health on Co-op Radio, and we're with Dr. Gabriel Cousins, Cousens, from the Tree of Life, treeoflife.nu, great webpage, where you'll get much of the information which you've heard now. And I was drawn to his webpage by an article which he wrote, putting it all together in a very brief and concise way. It's called Perspectives on Dairy. Is that on your webpage, Dr. Cousins?
Absolutely.
So much of the information which we have now, there we have another caller. And over to you, caller.
Oh, hello. Yes, I wanted to ask. I'm sorry I tuned in quite late. But I wanted to know, if you haven't already mentioned it, what the doctor thinks about canola oil, and if it's organic, is it okay?
Okay, Dr. Cousins.
Well, you know, that's a Canadian product. I want to be a little careful what I comment. Oil, original canola oil, had some very serious toxins in it that seemed to disorganize the lipid system and be associated with atherosclerosis, heart disease, and kind of brain dysfunction. Now, that's original organic canola oil. Now, my understanding is that's, again, one of those products that are mostly genetically engineered, and I'm not sure there's that much organic canola oil available. I'm sure there's somewhere. But it's primarily genetically engineered, which is definitely not healthy for you. That's the first thing we have to be clear about.
Now, people get sold on the omega-3 aspect of it. Is that, what about that?
Altered. The whole thing, there's some alteration. Now, I also want to say that they've done some repair work on how they're processing it. So it may not have these lipid toxins in them, if you follow what I'm saying, that were causing a lot of the lipid degeneration in the body. I generally recommend avoiding canola oil because most of it's genetically engineered.
Now, there's no such thing as a canola plant in nature. It was totally fabricated in a laboratory. Is that correct? And it's a Canadian invention.
Correct.
So, anyway, I wanted to go over the other aspect of, you were talking about raw milk, and maybe you can just refer to the organic aspect of it, because people think, oh, I'm consuming organic dairy. You know, that's you've mentioned that these dairy products contain so many problems. Maybe you can encapsulate it before we end this program. But what about organic and raw?
Okay, it's an interesting way of terming it, and it's an important distinction you're making. Raw means unpasteurized, but does not necessarily mean organic. Organic means the cows are only living on grass, okay? Whereas raw could be, you know, not the best kind of food, but it's not pasteurized. That's the difference. They both have a problem because, is there such a thing as organic when after I explain about Chernobyl, the radioactive iodine lands on the grass, whether it's an organic cow or not, it's still going to eat the grass, and you're still going to be a problem. Right now, I'm going to drop, this is kind of a bomb here. The U.S. has dropped the equivalent of 400,000 Hiroshima bombs in terms of what they call depleted uranium, but it's not depleted, it's active uranium, on Iraq. 2,700 tons of depleted uranium in their weapons, in their bombs, in their shells, in the machine gun bullets, and so forth. It's very effective as armor. It's a very effective for piercing armor. The end result, unfortunately, is absolutely disastrous. The rate of genetic mutations that is occurring in Iraq and, let's say, around the world, because the rate of perinatal mortality is now increasing again around the world, is a result or somehow associated with the increased amount of radioactivity that is floating around all over the planet. So, of that. Now, guess what? The cows eat the grass with the radioactive uranium on it, right?
Yep.
Whether you're an organic cow or raw, it doesn't really matter. They're still eating the grass and concentrating that and bringing that into your system. It's a lose-lose situation. So when you eat lower on the food chain, which is your vegetables and fruits and so forth, even though there's some radioactive uranium, you're not concentrating. For cows, it's a concentration of 5.5 amounts of pesticides and herbicides, which, again, are ubiquitous, okay? Or 15 times pesticides and herbicides if it's in the cow flesh. So what we're looking at is when we eat higher up in the food chain, which includes milk, we're concentrating pesticides, herbicides, radioactive uranium that we've now dropped. Can imagine, for an equivalent of 400,000 Hiroshima bombs in the atmosphere all over the planet. So one wants to eat as low in the food chain as possible. There are other things we can do. That's a longer story, and you're welcome to call the Tree of Life to hear about it. But basically, we have a thing called zeolite, NCD, which pulls out a lot of these radioactive elements, and it tastes like liquid, and that's something you can get from the Tree of Life. I'm not sure how available it is in Canada. That's what I'm saying. It should be available, but I'm not positive. And then we also have more advanced technology, which is a biophoton machine, which is programmed to create a homeopathic against the radioactive uranium. So there are different ways we can cope with it. It's a very serious problem. The rate of perinatal mortality is now increasing again. It had decreased when they signed the documents against nuclear proliferation. But now, with this dumping of the uranium in weapons, it's now increasing again. And they come across in dust clouds. It comes and it stays in the atmosphere, and it's brought down with the rain. It's all over. So we do have some big problems, and when you're eating higher in the food chain, you're amplifying those problems.
Now, many of the co-op radio listeners, and by the way, you're listening to Dynamic Health on 102.7 FM. My name's Carl Oskin. We're talking with Dr. Gabriel Cousins. Dr. Cousins, could you tell us, it's slightly off topic here, but many of the people who listen to co-op radio would probably be familiar with the idea that depleted uranium is being used in the armaments in Iraq. But why does it have? Why do these? What is the function of the depleted uranium in the U.S. bombs?
Oh well, it actually works. Okay, it creates an intense fire, and it pierces armor. It goes through everything, and when you unfortunately the U.S. soldiers are suffering as well as the British soldiers, and it actually pierces armor, and when you have the armor in the tanks. It's a harder metal, so it protects against it. But when it's fired from a shell, it creates a tremendous amount of heat.
Thank you. We'd like you to, we only have a few more minutes left, and then we'd like to ask Dr. Cousins to summarize what he said today. But we have our last call. If you could be brief, over to you, number on line two.
Oh, hi, Carl. You're just great. Carl, I just want to mention to do with canola oil and depleted uranium. Never the twain won't meet here. But canola oil is from rapeseed that is grown largely by Monsanto, and we should follow who all these pharmaceutical companies are involved with Monsanto and following the money on that, and the government highly invested in that. But the rapeseed is sent to the States. It's not Canadian oil at all. That's also another misnomer. It is processed down in the States and comes back to Canada as canola oil. They call it rapeseed. It literally rapes our health. And to do with uranium, just want to make a comment. Uranium is... when Dr. Helen Caldicott was here, she asked everybody, she gives each country a job to do. Canada's job was to quit, stop mining uranium. Absolutely, completely. Lobby groups on the government to stop mining uranium. Easier said than done if they're beefing up the old mining industry and nuclear technology, etc. But, of course, we know this the uranium is used, depleted uranium in missiles, bullets, and bombs all around the world. So we're in a bloody disgrace of corruption here in Canada.
Thank you for your call. And we only have 2 minutes left, and I'm going to ask Dr. Cousins to give us a little summary. And you're listening to Dynamic Health. Over to you, Dr. Cousins.
Here it goes, Carl. Thank you. Let me just say, you're doing a great job, and I really appreciate your listeners. They're incredibly well-informed, so it's a joy to speak to them. I'm going to approach it this way. I want to say that, you know, dairy is just not a healthy food. I don't want to get people the idea that if you drink dairy, you won't wake up spiritually, but it does clog what we call the nadis or the spiritual nervous system. It brings the energy of death, misery, and suffering into our spiritual bodies as well as our physical bodies. And it's time for us to switch to the Garden of Eden diet, which is in essence a Genesis 129, which is a vegan diet. When we go to this diet, we stop creating inhumane cruelty and suffering and death to these animals. We stop wasting resources, stop creating ecological damage. We minimize the transmission of serious diseases, minimize the amount of juvenile diabetes. We help those 50 million people, at least in the United States, with lactose intolerances and digestive disorders, including the M. tuberculi. We decrease the amount of toxins and contaminants that we're exposed to. We decrease the amount of cancers, particularly lymphomas, which are 350% higher, as well as the bovine leukemia viruses that are there, and ovarian cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer. And we generally bringing health and well-being to the planet. What the essential question is even though it's not even true, but a lot of people think I need milk. But even if they think they need milk, the question is, are my narcissistic needs more important than the healing of the planet?
Dr. Cousins, we're right out of time. I'd like to just quote you on one item you said. Milk is not designed for humans. And thank you for being on Dynamic Health.
Okay, thank you very much. Great interview.
My name is Carl Loskin. I'm sitting in for Croft Woodruff. And thank you for listening.